I'm Steve Potter, and this is St. Louis on the Air. On Sunday, The Handmaid's Tale won 8 Emmys, including Outstanding Drama Series. Based on Margaret Atwood's 1985 book, a second season is in the works, and tonight she received the 2017 St. Louis Literary Award at a ceremony at the Sheldon. Margaret Atwood, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much.
First, congratulations on the Emmys. I mean, this was only 2 days ago. What was Sunday like for you?
Well, I had never been to an Emmys before, and I had certainly never seen so many extremely fancy dresses or such high heels. So I was pretty riveted by that. They put on a good show, as you know. So it was one of those nights where you never quite knew what was going to happen next.
Well, since you bring up the fashion thing, did you think about that a lot? You know, what should I wear?
I definitely chose red on purpose.
Well, you know, you sort of excited the Twitterverse, too.
I did? What did I do?
Well,
apparently my purse became a thing.
I didn't want to say anything, but when I met you,
my purse has gotten a very swelled head out of this. It's going to start its own reality TV show, and I don't know what it's a purse.
Well, when I met you a couple of minutes ago, I didn't want to say anything, but I was looking for that black purse.
This is not the same one. No,
Where is it?
Well, it probably is back in Toronto by now, but it's just a purse.
Right, you live in Toronto.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's not a sparkly sequined clutched evening bag, but it is a velvet receptacle that's big enough to hold my glasses.
It didn't cost $20,000 or anything like that.
Are you joking?
Yep. No,
it did not.
Well, not really. Some of them do. You know, the reason I bring that up because people on Twitter went on and on about the fact that when you went up there with the rest of your crew to accept the Emmy, you had your purse with you.
Well, what's wrong with
it? I didn't say
why
anything.
Would I not have my purse?
Well, I wanted to ask you, I mean, did you find that funny or is that annoying to hear that stuff?
I think it's funny. yes. I mean, things take on a life of their own. And my purse goes with me onto stage these days because once upon a time, one of my fans nicked my purse.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, if I had a purse, I'd keep it with me too, so I get it.
Would you?
Yeah,
you get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Sunday was a long night, I bet. What happened after the broadcast?
There were two after parties. One is called the Governor's Ball, and I kept trying to find out who the governor was without success. But there must be a governor of something. And it was extremely Hollywood. It had many flashing lights and chandelier-type things and very glamorous and amazing table decorations and a lot of dressed-up people, and it was quite loud.
A night to remember.
I certainly remember it, as you can see. And then there was a Hulu party. Hulu was very
That's the network.
Happy. That is the
right.
streaming service, which had never been nominated for anything before. And this is their breakout show. They had never had such a show before. So they really gambled. They went for it. Not a self-evident thing. This is not everybody's favorite kind of story. And it worked out for them, so they were very happy beaming and smiling.
I'm sure you expected the series to be successful, but are you surprised a little bit?
Okay, so I was writing screenplays back in 1970, and I did quite a bit of that in the 70s. And you know, if you look at these things as they come together, you can have a wonderful book, you can have a wonderful screenplay, you can have a wonderful cast, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So there's no formula that necessarily makes something work. So it's always a gamble.
And other people are involved in the creative process of that besides you.
You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Right.
But in this case, the entire team was dedicated to this, and they're all really, really good at what they do. So I was very, very happy for them and would have been quite annoyed had they not got these things.
Right. Well, tonight at the Sheldon, you're going to receive this year's St. Louis Literary Award, which recognizes you for your body of work. So congratulations on
Thank
that,
you.
Too. And that's by the St. Louis University Library Associates, by the way. You draw a lot on history for your work.
I really do.
Yeah. So can you kind of explain the background of how that fits into The Handmaid's Tale?
Okay.
Where your history came from?
Yeah, into that Handmaid's Tale, my rule was that I would put nothing that had not already happened at some time in some place. And I put them all together in an unlikely location. So I put it in Cambridge, Massachusetts, home of my ancestors. I get to say bad things about those witch hangers. So I put it there because by that time it was not the head of a 17th century Puritan theocracy. It was considered a bastion of liberal democracy and one of those places in which people were in the habit of saying it could never happen here. But from history, we know that if conditions are such, anything can happen anywhere. And the 17th century was one of the foundational moments of the United States of America. We tend to forget that. We think of it as being the 18th, end of the 18th, Enlightenment, founding fathers, all of that kind of thing. But underneath that, there is another layer, and that is from the 17th. So that's part of it, but also each one of the details, including the use of clothing as definitive, and including women not allowed to read. It was slaves who were not allowed to read in the United States. Polygamy, the only religion that originated in the United States, namely Mormons, began as polygamists. And all of the other kinds of details, a lot from Hitler, Stalin, and company, you know, what it was like to live in a totalitarian society.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with author Margaret Atwood. Following the protests that have happened here over St. Louis, there's the Stockley verdict, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and there were several people and events that have been canceled over the weekend. And when you consider some of the themes that you address in your work, police brutality and related things like that, did it ever occur to you for a minute maybe that you'd cancel too today?
I think I was already here before that happened. Before cancellation became a topic. So uh-huh. I think you've got two choices, and one of them would be to not show up, and one of them would be to show up and say something. So I would rather show up and say something. Uh-huh. The kind of event that I'm doing is not, it's not an outdoor play. It's not a musical type of thing. It's a group of people who are honoring literature. And I think within that frame, it's really important to say, what's happening to your educational system, among other things? And let's learn about police states. You know, what is a police state? A police state is a state in which it is the police who decide who's guilty and who they're going to shoot. And if you allow that, to happen, you're on a step to a police state. So one way we can find out about police states is reading about previous ones. Yeah. And I don't think you want to be in a police state.
No. Are you planning to address any of this tonight? Do you know what you're going to?
I'm going to have to rewrite my speech, which I wrote before this had happened. Uh-huh. So I will definitely do the, I will put that in. And I will also mention that this is the home of Josephine Baker.
Right.
And she would have had something to say about this.
Yes. I understand, I think it was yesterday, that you were with some people in the Central West End. I know you interacted with people and talked about some of the recent events. What kind of conversations did you have?
What was I supposed to do?
Someone told me, if it's not correct, you were in the Central West End part of town yesterday, and we're talking to some people.
Oh, you mean I had...
Just got feedback from
you people. You mean I had some dinner with people?
Maybe that was it.
I think that's what... They made me a beautiful cake in the shape of a handmaid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did. Uh-huh. So this was just one of, it's the dinner that they usually have for the invited literary award person. Uh-huh. And they were definitely talking about this the protests and all of this.
What kind of feeling did you get?
Oh, they were all very involved. These are people who turn up at the protests. Mm-hmm. So they were saying to me as if I knew, what should we do? And I said, how about voting next time? But I also said, just turning up is a statement. And I also said, read a little bit about or be aware of the fact that of course in any of these kinds of cultural confrontations, there's going to be infiltration and agent provocateur. Mm-hmm. So they said, they broke windows. I said, who broke windows? How do you know who broke windows? You actually don't know.
You know, you said something about people asking you what you know. There are people that think that you are able to predict the future.
No, I cannot predict
but
the future.
But you hear that, don't you?
No. If I could predict the future, I would have cornered the stock market long ago.
But you've heard people say that.
Yeah, I know, but it's not true. I read the tea leaves, but they're tea leaves based on patterns of human behavior and stuff people have already done. So, and the future is not set in stone. There is no the future. There are a number of possible futures, and one of the possible futures is a police state, and you don't want to be in that future.
Right. We would like to have comments or questions from our listeners for Margaret Atwood. If you're interested, you can give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at STL on the air. The Handmaid's Tale. Maybe for those that don't know, we should explain what a handmaid is.
Okay. So in that future that you don't want to be in either, you don't want to be in that future. So I wrote this book in 1985, a while ago now, and I was basing it simply on things that some people in the United States were saying they would like to do if they had the chance. And I was also basing it on demographic trends. And I was also basing it on states such as Romania under Ceausescu, in which he felt that there weren't enough Romanians being born, and he put in a policy of enforced childbirth. So it was mandatory for women to have four children and to get tested every month. And if they didn't get pregnant, they had to explain why that. I mean, it was on them to explain why they hadn't got pregnant.
Yeah.
So, and a long history, including all of the history in which, look at Henry VIII and poor old Anne Boleyn, in which no child was produced, it was always the woman's fault. So in the future of The Handmaid's Tale, the United States has become a totalitarian theocracy and with mandatory childbirth, because of the falling demographics. And by the way, that is now coming true.
You see why people think you can predict the future.
Yeah, I know. I would rather not have any of these futures that I write come true. And you write books like this to say, you don't want to go there. You know, this is not the future you wish to be in.
But did you think it was a possibility when you were writing it, or is it just way out there?
Of course I thought it was a possibility, because I'd been reading the newspapers. Not so much who did what, but who said what. And many other things beside. So since I was born in 1939, you can see that I'm a World War II child, and I've always therefore been very interested in what happened to Germany? You know, how did that happen? What happened in Russia? How did Stalin get in? How do these people behave once they get in? So all totalitarians of all kinds have interested me for a long time.
What happened to you back when you were a little girl or something for this to be in your brain?
What happened to me? I was born in 39, and therefore Canada went into the war right then. So I was born 2 months after we entered the war, and my whole early childhood was spent in that period of time. So pretty influential on me, and then along came George Orwell, who ruined me as a child because I read Animal Farm, and I thought it was going to be about animals, you know, nice, like Wind in the Willows or something.
You and I have a little something in common. I know you grew up part in Toronto and you live there now.
Yes.
And I went through half of my grade school in Toronto. So I don't know.
What years were those, if you don't mind my asking? I think you're quite a lot younger than me.
Well, I would have been something like 1961 through 64.
Okay, so a bit later than the line up in rows, march in the girls' door, march in the boys' door of the late 40s.
Right. So I don't know, do you find people's thinking process about politics and all the issues you address, are Canadians any different than people in this country?
Oh, well, they think they are. Yeah, they're having a moment. Canada's having a moment right now of feeling rather smug. But Canada's also, of course, the country that people in the United States have traditionally escaped to when things got tough here. And so it is in The Handmaid's Tale. Our central character is trying to escape to Canada. Canada also has some history it needs to come to terms with, just as the United States does.
Mm-hmm.
And here the big thing it needs to come to terms with is slavery and the fallout from that. And in Canada, it's the relationships with Native peoples and the fallout from that, which they are encountering head-on right now.
We have a tweet from a gentleman named Ryan. He's wondering how you were involved in the production direction of The Handmaid's Tale, the series. I know you were some sort of creative advisor or something.
Yeah, I was a consultant.
Does that mean anything?
Yeah, it does actually mean it means that I had a lot of conversations with Bruce Miller, who is the showrunner and who got the Emmy for Best Writer. So the showrunner, you write the arc of the series, you write some of the scripts, and you have a writer's room. So I was mostly talking with Bruce, and he was explaining some of the choices that he made that differ from the book and what he was going to do with that and why he did it, and it all made sense to me. So we haven't had a fight.
Yet.
Yet. Yeah, yet.
Well, from what I understand, the first season pretty much followed your book pretty closely, but the second season all be up in the air, right?
Well, the first season again diverged because in the book once a character disappears from the view of the narrator, you don't know what happened to that person. So in the series, he follows some of those characters and gives them a life of their own. We follow what happens to them. And so he built it out quite a lot more. It's much more multi-narrative than the book is. But he followed the rule, you can't put anything in that has not happened.
All right, let's go to the phones and take a comment. We have Patricia calling from St. Louis, who I think is a fan of your books. Go ahead, Patricia. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Miss Atwood. It's been my pleasure reading your books over the years. I'm from Toronto. I've lived in Toronto most of my life until moving to the U.S. And I've had the wonderful honor to serve you at one of the great restaurants in Toronto, Yosso's.
You were there. What an amazing thing that is.
Yes. So, but I've been a fan of your books. I think they were kind of required reading in some of your earlier books in high school, and I've followed your books ever since. And my mother is a fan as well. And I thought it was interesting the comment you said about the differences between Canada and the U.S. And because I live here now and have for almost 20 years, I see the differences between how I was raised and how we dealt with people of different origins, except for the natives, and the difference between that and how I see it here in the U.S. And so it's been an interesting, especially right now at what's happening in St. Louis, for you to comment about it as well from how you've written it in The Handmaid's Tale.
Thanks, so, Patricia.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
You have a comment?
Yeah, well, I mean, Toronto is the most multi-ethnic city in the world, according to people who count such things. And it does have a lot of different kinds of people. But that doesn't mean it is without problems.
You know, I've talked to authors before who have had their work translated into movies or television programs, and it's not always what they expect. And Tom from Webster Groves has some comments about that regarding the program on Hulu. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
I did want to ask what she thought of the final product. Did she see see what she saw when she wrote the book?
Well, remember that I wrote the book in 1985. So this may come as a shock to you, but in 1995 there were no lattes. There were also no cell phones. So one of the things they did with the series was they updated it to now. And in the book, there are no black people because they've all been put into a national homeland. So I did the segregationist version, like South Africa, and there are therefore no multiracial marriages. So they updated it to now, and there are characters of many different kinds, and the idea of Bruce was that fertility was more important to people in this regime than race.
And do people react to the book differently now than they did back in the 80s?
They do react to it differently, particularly in Europe, but more in, so how it went and when it was first published, the English said jolly good yarn. They didn't believe that this, you know, could ever happen. This could never happen. Canadians, in their nervous way, said, could it happen here? And Americans said, how much time have we got? So that was in general the reaction. But some Americans, such as Mary McCarthy, said it couldn't happen here. So the opinion was divided, but I'm not getting any "it couldn't happen here" now. In fact, I'm getting quite a lot of "it's already happening." Yeah. And you'll notice that the handmaids have escaped from the book. They're running around out there uncontrolled, and they're turning up at state legislatures as an immediately recognizable protest symbol in connection with women's rights.
Mm-hmm. And what about today's politics here in the United States? Well, I think you've said a lot other places. You don't shy away from taking a stand on what you think of the current administration and all that.
Well, let me put it this way, the ground shifts daily. So you never know. It's not predictable. This administration, I'm not alone in saying that, is that it is not predictable. And that is why it has generated so very much print and talk. So let's say that this is unprecedented. I don't think there's ever been anything quite like this. And like everybody else, I open up the news every day not knowing what I will read.
What about what you will write? Are the things that we're going through right now and you're experiencing today, will that be some sort of other tale for you in the future?
I think there are younger writers out there busily writing away even as we speak. And people often say to me, how should artists respond to this? And I say artists should do what they do. And one of the things that writers have done over the years is they have written a literature of witness. But there is so much that we at the moment don't know, and so much that is possibly unknowable, because if there's a grand plan, we have yet to see it.
We've got time for one more call. Let's go to Maud in St. Louis. She has a comment regarding immigration and issues related to that. Go ahead, Maud.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I was curious. I see similar themes regarding immigration. I just, at the beginning of the year, devoured your Mad Adams trilogy. And when you made the comment about dropping birth rates in this country, some of the themes between The Handmaid's Tale and the issues that it was addressing around fertility, and then also the issues of immigration and movement and how that relates today to changes in our demographics and the politics that are surrounding new Americans and immigrants. I just see that there's the potential for connecting a lot of dots there, and wanted to see if you could expand more on your issues, on any thoughts that you have around immigration in this country and migration globally.
Thanks,
well,
Mark.
Well, if you don't want those talented, enthusiastic, smart young dreamers, we'll take them. Send them our way. We will Canada would benefit.
I was saying, I wonder if people may not know that you were actually in the first first program of the series, The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, you mean I whacked Elizabeth Moss over the head?
That was it.
Yeah, I frightened my grandchildren.
Why didn't that turn into a recurring role for you?
Oh, well, I think there's only so many times you can whack Elizabeth Moss over the head. But we had to shoot the scene several times because they said, hit her harder. Come on.
Well, what's going to happen next season? Are you consultant too, or is it totally out of your hands?
Wild horses would not drag that from me. My lips are sealed.
All right. Well, there's
top
another
secret.
There's another secret I want to ask you about. You may not answer this one either. Your most recent novel, Hagseed, it's your take on The Tempest.
Yeah.
And there's a rumor, and it's set in a men's prison, I should say.
Yes.
And there's a rumor that you, while you're here in St. Louis, you're going to make some kind of announcement about this.
I am.
But, I mean, come on, you can tell me.
I can tell you, but we're on air.
Does that mean you won't tell me?
Oh, well, I don't know. I think you've kind of figured it out yourself. I mean, how much fun would it be to do a play based on a novel, based on a play, based on a play set in a men's prison?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where might be a likely place for that to happen? Is that enough of a hint?
Are you going to make the announcement tonight at
yes.
the Sheldon?
I am.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. You grew up in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had been to St. Louis once a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember why or when?
I don't remember why. I think a long, long time ago is when. and that is, I mean, why would I be coming? I would be coming to do a literary thing.
Mm-hmm.
As usual.
Uh-huh. You've been here a few days already, though, right?
No, I came to yesterday.
Yesterday, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to do a piece coming up here in just a couple of moments about a podcast for The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay. What,
it's based here in St. Louis. I know there's another one somewhere else. Have you listened to those?
I've had rumors of them because, of course, I pick it up on Twitter. And they seem to be an enthusiastic bunch. And all sorts of handmaid's artifacts are appearing in the world, including a lovely cake last night, including a knitted chicken in a Handmaid's Tale outfit, including a picture of something called the Hand Soap's Tale, which was a hand soap container with a little bonnet on it and a red dress, and several pictures of dogs and cats dressed up, and let us mention the dance number of the Emmys, and also something you can get on YouTube called something like Finally They Wrote a Handmaid's Tale for Men, which is pretty funny.
I say you've had a pretty incredible week. You've been on national television on the Emmys, and you've had a cake made for you in St. Louis. So
yes.
Can't do much better than that.
What could be better?
Margaret Atwood, thank you so much for coming in today and sharing. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you very much.
And we'll continue with more St. Louis on the Air right after this.